Right, it's a little after 5 o'clock then. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. I haven't a clue what happened there, and if you're listening to the Podomatic, you won't know what I'm talking about. There was a minor technical hiccup, but thankfully I managed to sort it out. Enough of that. It's the 28th of February 2023. March Madness tomorrow. Spring will be sprung. I'm the BBG, live from BBG Towers in Salford. Terrific programme lined up for you today. Thanks for finding me again.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. This is your Richie Allen Show, live from the magnificent city of Salford.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, just momentarily broadcasting in mono. I don't know. I fixed it anyway. Hey, listen, Sally Beck is back on the Richie Allen Show. What a terrific writer and journalist Sally Beck is. More than 3 decades experience writing for the national press and magazines. Sally these days writes for The Conservative Woman and does so brilliantly. If you put Sally's name into a search engine with Conservative Woman, you'll find her recent articles. We'll be talking about those a bit later on in the programme. Can't wait to welcome Sally back to the show. You can join in via my website, richieallen.co.uk. Leave a comment via the live comment feature. And I will, as usual, read the comments out throughout the programme Tuesday. Yeah. Yeah, and you're probably tired of me saying it, but I'm chuffed to bits, thrilled to bits, cock-a-hoop over the moon that today is the final day, the last day of February. I'm delighted. So I am. I might even have a sneaky Bacardi later on. It doesn't take much of an excuse. Let's be honest about that. So between now and the top of the hour before Sally, I've got many, many a story to talk with you about. And like I said, I would really appreciate your comments as I go along. Now, this made me laugh. By the way, I've been a bit quiet on my own website. It's because I'm taking it easy, because I was very unwell of late, as you know. Okay. And by the way, the streaming is back to normal. So nobody, whether they are listening via my website on a mobile phone or on a tablet, there are no problems now. It's all back to normal. Thanks be to Hayden Hewitt. Thank you, Hayden. This in the Telegraph. It's one of them, this. It's one of them. One of those. One of those would be appropriate. School suspends sex education after drag queen told 11-year-olds there are 73 genders. I thought there were more than 100. Apparently not. Isle of Man suspends the programme after a performer leaves children traumatised because of age-inappropriate material. Let me read a little bit of the story. Sex education suspended over 11-year-olds being told 73 genders by a drag queen. The Isle of Man government has launched an independent inquiry into a review, or has launched an independent review even, of its personal, social, health and economic curriculum. That's PSHE, after parents raised the alarm about the, quote, graphic, disproportionate, indecent presentation, end quote, of sexual acts and different gender identities understood to have been taught in lessons. Now, parents of pupils at Queen Elizabeth II High School in Peel on the Isle of Man have reported that Year 7 pupils were taught by a drag queen who told them there are 73 genders. When one upset child said, "There's only two," the drag queen allegedly responded, "You've upset me," and threw the pupil out of the class. Oh, ooh-wee-hoo. I can't do it now. I can't do it because my voice is gone. I can't do it. I can't reach the notes because my voice is gone. Oh, wee-hoo. Right. "You've upset me," says the drag queen. "Get out of this classroom." When the kid said, "Isn't there only two?" Anyway, some 11-year-olds at the school were taught about oral sex and anal sex by the drag queen, while another group learned about sex change operations and were shown, 11-year-olds now, how skin graft taken from a girl's arm could be used on an artificial penis. It's not funny. Of course it isn't funny. And the right, the conservative right, the sometimes the far right, pick up on these stories and they are accused often of creating a moral panic. But this is madness. How does this even happen? How does it happen? To read further into the article, a lot of children are too traumatised to even talk to their parents, says who? Says Eliza Cox, vice chairman of Marone Commissioners. And she was speaking to the Isle of Man's Energy FM radio. As a parent, said Eliza, you don't know what children are being taught. She said that one teacher on the island had told her she had to teach a group of boys and girls in year 7 and 8 how to masturbate. This can't be true, dear listener. But then it is true. It can't be, but it is true. A teacher was asked to teach boys and girls in years 7 and 8, that's 11 and 12, how to masturbate. Another teacher was said to be so uncomfortable with the content of the curriculum that the teacher told pupils, wait for this, the teacher told pupils, please don't listen to me while I am speaking in this lesson. I laugh not because I find it funny, I laugh because I am incredulous. Where are the parents? Where are they? Where are the pitchforks? Where are the torches? Where are the pickup trucks and the rope? Who could tolerate this? If you tolerate this, then your children. Who could put up with their children being taught about masturbation aged 11 by a teacher? It's tantamount, well, it is child abuse, isn't it? 8 minutes past the hour. I'll just leave that one there, hanging in the air. Now, this is a really important story, at least for listeners of this particular programme and listeners who've been listening to me for, well, a number of years. Police are, they've just finished a press conference. You'll remember earlier in the year we talked about Constance Martin, who's an aristocrat or is connected to an aristocratic family. And a guy called Mark Gordon, she's 35, he's 48, they went missing with their brand newborn baby. And they have been the subject of a manhunt, to use that term, over the last six weeks, right? As police have been desperate to find them so that they could check on the welfare of their baby. Because they had the baby, the woman had the baby, out of hospital care. Seemed to give birth to this baby either alone or with help from friends. And then they scarpered out of town, they skedaddled. And the press has been all over this and the police have been chasing this couple. Now, they were found last night in Brighton at a place called Stanmer Villers about 9:30 last night. They've been arrested and they remain in custody, as far as I know, right up to 10 minutes past five today. The baby is still missing, apparently, but I'm being made aware that there has been a change in terms of the charges against this particular couple, because they were charged with neglect earlier on this morning. The baby is missing, right? Neglect because they didn't bring the baby to a doctor or to the hospital to be checked up after the birth, right? But now it seems they have been arrested on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter. Even though the baby hasn't been found, and please God, the baby is alive and well and is with friends. Why did this couple abscond when the baby was born? Why did they have the baby outside of medical care? Well, these are questions everybody who's following this story wants to know. I have my suspicions, and I'm reticent always to be giving, you know, to be putting out theories on these things, because I know nothing, and it's probably of no help to anybody. But I wonder, did the couple fear that when the baby was born, the baby would be taken from them? And this is because the father is a guy called Mark Gordon, and he has a conviction in the United States for kidnapping, and he's on the sex offenders register. And I wonder, did they think that when the baby was born, they were going to lose the baby? And is this why they scarpered? Because babies have been taken away and taken into care for less than, you know, the dad is a convicted kidnapper or the dad is on the sex offenders register or whatever. Now, I could be talking out of my backside, which I often do, so just ignore that. But they're still looking for the baby as I speak. And now the couple have been charged with gross negligence manslaughter. 53 days they were on the run with the child. It's a really fascinating story, not least because of this woman's connections to the aristocracy, Constance Martin. Her father has broken ranks, a guy called Napier Martin, to say that he's very concerned about the well-being of the baby. The couple has refused, apparently, to this point, to tell the police where the child is. And that leaves you kind of hoping that they've got the child in the care of friends. What a story. Okay, let's leave that one there. But I'm very interested in it as to why they felt they had to do that. And, you know, I suppose, again, the well-being of the baby. Everybody wants the baby to be found alive and well. Now, the BBC has been producing a drama about Jimmy Savile, the paedophile, one of the BBC's most famous and then infamous presenters. He was their, I suppose, he was their marquee presenter for many, many years. Top of the Pops and Jim'll Fix It and lots of other stuff as well. After he died, it emerged that he had committed the most heinous abuses against, well, everybody, really. Boys, girls, OAPs in care homes. This guy was sick beyond my imagination, beyond your imagination. Now, the BBC has been filming a drama about him, and Steve Coogan, the comedian and actor, was given the job of playing Jimmy Savile. But it has been put on hold, apparently, this Jimmy Savile drama. It finished filming late last year and was due to come out, apparently, in the spring. But it's been put back, and it's because of criticism from the victims. And that's being reported by a number of newspapers today. Victims not happy with this film being made. I don't know if the victims know, have seen the script, or if they have any idea as to what it's going to look like on screen, but they're not happy. I'm interested in that. I'm also interested that the BBC would do it. It's kind of marking your own homework, isn't it? The BBC doing a serial drama about Jimmy Savile, when surely top brass at the BBC must have known what Jimmy Savile was doing back in the day. And I don't think that's unfair as a hypothesis. They must have known, right, what the guy was doing. Yeah. You remember Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols and what he said when Savile was still alive? Not only Johnny Rotten, but other celebrities as well. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. We'll keep an eye on it. Now to, more prescient news. Rishi Sunak, the UK Prime Minister, has enraged Remoaners who claim that he is gaslighting them. Remoaners is a term that has been foisted upon people who voted for the UK to stay in the European Union and then have been pretty much complaining about the fact that the UK voted to leave back in 2016. They've been complaining ever since. So they've been dubbed Remoaners. You know that, right? But I'm going to tell you this. The Remoaners who claim that Rishi Sunak is gaslighting them, I think they have a point. I have no time for the European Union. I voted to leave for the laugh, right? For the laugh, because I didn't believe it would make any difference. There shouldn't be any such thing as the European Union. The European Union is... look, I'm not going to get into it. You know what it is. We've spent decades on this, on programmes like this, talking about the European Union. However, all things being equal, the Remoaners have a point, right? He's delivered a new agreement on Northern Ireland and post-Brexit trading arrangements for Northern Ireland. He's agreed this with the European Union. Ursula von der Leyen was in town to announce this with Sunak yesterday, right? All this thing about a border in the Irish Sea and special arrangements and Northern Ireland, you know, leaving the Union. All of this stuff that went on for the last 5, 6, 7 years. They've come to an agreement now anyway. And everybody is lauding this agreement, apart from one or two DUP MPs. Sammy What's-His-Face being one of them. Is it Sammy Wilson? It'll come back to me in a moment. But anyway, back to Sunak gaslighting Remainers. He is, because this really is vaudeville. Listen to the UK Prime Minister extolling the virtues of the EU single market. This has driven Remoaners mad today.
Northern Ireland is in the unbelievably special position, unique position in the entire world, European continent, in having privileged access, not just to the UK home market, which is enormous, fifth biggest in the world, but also the European Union single market. Nobody else has that. No one. Only you guys. Only here. And that is the prize. I can tell you, when I go around the world and talk to businesses, they know that. They're like, that's interesting. If you guys get this sorted, then we want to invest in Northern Ireland. Because nowhere else does that exist. That's like the world's most exciting economic zone.
Imagine that. And Remoaners, if we continue to call them that, have been throwing furniture around their houses, kicking their cats. No, they haven't been kicking their cats. That's a terrible thing to do. But they've been screaming at the children all day long. It's amazing what you've got, Northern Ireland. You've got access to the UK market. You've got access to the single market. You've got the best of everything, said Rishi Sunak today. And those who voted to stay in the European Union are screaming. And you know, all things being equal, they have a point, don't they? They're not right. They don't understand the depth of it and what the European Union is. But just on the face of it, they've got a point. How dare you, you know, talk up leaving the European Union and then go and give Northern Ireland this access to the single market and to the market over here and then say it's the best possible thing you could possibly have. Rishi Sunak, the UK Prime Minister. We leave that one there. For now, this is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show with me, Richie Allen. I'll do one more quick story and then we'll take a musical break. We'll come back. There's loads to talk about this hour. Sally Beck will join me a little bit later on. RichieAllen.co.uk. Comment live is where you can leave comments for the programme. I do hope you will drop in a comment or two for me. Now, this is important as well. This is what brought Nicola Sturgeon to her knees, didn't it? And this is Isla Bryson, real name Adam Graham, the rapist who decided after being convicted of rape that he would change his identity, basically, and claimed that he was a woman, that he was transitioning. He's been jailed for 8 years today. Let's have a listen to Sky News with the story and a little bit of background.
The transgender rapist Isla Bryson has been jailed for 8 years for attacks on two women while she was still a man.
While she was still a man. How do you say that without laughing?
Bryson met both victims online, with prosecutors saying the 31-year-old preyed on vulnerable women. This is what the judge had to say earlier.
Having regard to the whole circumstances of the case, in particular the gravity of the charges, only a custodial sentence is appropriate. It is necessary to punish you and to seek to deter you and others from behaving in this way, and in particular to protect the public from you. Having considered the pattern of offending, the gravity of your crimes, and the insights in the various reports, I consider that the question of how best to protect the public does arise. I am concerned to ensure that the public is adequately protected against serious harm from you when you are released from prison. It is plain that you present a particularly significant risk to any woman with whom you form a relationship. Having reflected carefully on all the circumstances, in my judgment, the normal period of license would not be enough to protect the public from serious harm from you. Accordingly, I consider that the custodial sentence in your case should be by way of an extended sentence. In all the circumstances, I impose the following sentence. On charges 1 and 3 taken together, I sentence you to a cumulo extended sentence of 11 years, with a custodial term of 8 years and an extension period of 3 years, for the duration of which you will be under licence on conditions fixed by the Scottish ministers.
Now, that was the judge summing up. As for the 8-year sentence, is that appropriate considering the gravity of the crimes? Former UK Justice Minister Anne Widdecombe talking with Talk TV.
Well, that's a matter for the courts. I mean, the thing here is I do not understand why it was ever even contemplated that he could serve his time in a woman's prison. I mean, it really is cloud cuckoo land. It's Alice in Wonderland. I can't believe that future generations looking back will be able to make any sense of it at all. They'll say, what? You know, what were our ancestors doing?
Yeah.
And that I've never understood. As for the 8 years, that, as I say, is a matter for the courts. We're getting into the habit recently of trying to second guess the courts. And sometimes they get it wrong. But that's a matter for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think they get it wrong because the structures of sentencing are wrong and have been wrong for a very long time, which is not necessarily the court's fault. But I think they could do with a bit of a revamp, couldn't they?
Ah, now, if you read my Express column that's coming out tomorrow, you'll find that I say exactly that, Mike.
Well, so, listen, I can't believe... Anne, I can't believe we've reached so many points of agreement today. Normally, you're scolding me for something or other.
Well, I mean, I do feel very strongly that you shouldn't have politicians intervening in the justice system. You know, you've got the problem at the moment that Dominic Raab is being asked by a family not to allow a particular release when the system allows him to be released. Now, my argument in tomorrow's column is we shouldn't do this case by case. We should actually fundamentally change the law around sentencing.
Simple as that. Who could argue with that? It's interesting, going back to the Constance Martin and Mark Gordon story, the missing baby, they're in police custody, they've been charged with gross negligence manslaughter. Quick update on that. The police are saying they are considering the possibility that the baby has come to harm, hence the charge of gross negligence manslaughter in the absence of a body. Yeah, I'm sure you've got thoughts on this one. I'd love to hear them. It's richieallen.co.uk. I'm Richie Allen, the BBG, with you till 7 o'clock. Sally Beck will be with us a little bit later on. Terrific writer is Sally. National Press for 3 decades. The Conservative Woman these days, which is a great read, The Conservative Woman. Be God, be jeepers. There was a time when I thought, or I would have thought, it's impossible for me to say something like that. The Conservative Woman is a great read, but it is a very good read. They've got some brilliant authors there.
The Richie Allen Show is the world's most popular independent news radio show. Listen on demand via your regular podcast provider.
Do indeed. It's richieallen.co.uk. Keep the comments coming in. I'll read them when I come back. Plenty more to come between now and the top of the hour. This is Simon and Garfunkel. The Graduate, wasn't it? Yeah, it was used in The Graduate. Simon and Garfunkel and Mrs. Robinson on The Richie Allen Show. Thanks for your comments. You're commenting on pretty much everything that's been covered thus far. Baird asks or says, there are how many people and how many children that go missing every day? There's always got to be something more going on with these particular stories that the press are told to push. Wouldn't happen to know what that could be, but I'm sure there will be a lot of videos on BitChute connecting them to JFK or super volcanoes and HAARP. Bit of sarcasm there. Fair enough. Let's scroll on down. Cookie says it's a shame the public are not protected from government and big pharma. Paul says, I love how the news outlets report on the rapist but never give his birth name. You know, like dead naming the culprit is far more offensive than the heinous crimes he committed. Good point, Paul. That's fair enough. Heather in the UAE. How are you, Heather? She says, I voted Remain in 2016 as I was moving to Cyprus. You selfish bibe. She said, I voted Remain. I was moving to Cyprus, so I had a narrow view of Brexit. I know different now, though, and I would vote even Leave if the referendum was repeated. You never know, Heather. It might well be. Angela says, Richie, it occurs to me that the whole changing your gender, pretending to be a woman after raping women, almost makes it feel like it's less of a crime, less brutal somehow. It isn't, of course, says Angela. It's a good point, Angela. Thanks for that. Abdel says, I'll bet Isla, the trans woman, soon sheds his dress and shaves his head when he arrives in Peterhead. Maybe. Very good. Hi to Rona. Thank you, Rona. Hi to Colin. Well, Colin, this is rather spooky. Is it me, says Colin, or is Sunak dropping his vowels in a Blair-type way? That's very strange because Jean-Anne Crowley sent me a message when I played the Sunak clip to say how he sounded so remarkably like Tony Blair. Very good, very good. It didn't occur to me, but now that I think of it, both of you are absolutely spot on. Who would want to play Savile, asked Scottish John. An actor, says Jenny. It doesn't mean they share the same morality as the characters, exactly. It's a meaty role, I suppose, the actor would say. Banjo says, trans people say you should accept me for what I am. They don't even accept what they are themselves. Margaret says, speaking of the Isle of Man and the drag queen coming into the 11-year-olds to tell them that there are 73 genders and that you can take a skin graft from the arm of a girl to create a penis. Margaret says, I cannot believe the teachers condone this. I completely agree with you, Richie. Why are the parents not intervening? Probably scared of the consequences. Being described as bigots and hate speech and all that sort of stuff. Wouldn't be me. Faisal came on to say, evening all, what's wrong with kids nowadays? I never had to be taught to masturbate, says Faisal. Good point. It didn't occur to me, but you're absolutely spot on. I remember when I discovered it. It was the 17th of July, 1981. It was about 25 past four. It was a Tuesday. No, but you, yeah, nobody had to tell us. Young boys and young girls discover this by accident, I think, from what I've read. And then it's happy days, isn't it, for a while anyway. Faisal, thank you, Faisal. Lovely. Wendy says, afternoon to everybody listening today. Kiki says, Richie, Sandy was great yesterday, as all the guests are. Yes, thank you. Sandy was very good, Sandy Adams, yesterday afternoon. Tend to have a high caliber of guests on this programme, don't you know? Hi to Diane Hughes, hi to Patricia as well. This is Tuesday's programme. It is your Richie Allen programme, 29 minutes to the top of the hour. Just very briefly, on the madness of the madness of the madness and spending money, taxpayers' money. If you're in this part of the world, you've probably heard of Tracy Braben. Now, Tracy was in Coronation Street. She was an actress. I suppose she still is an actress. She might return to acting when she's done with politics. These days, she is the Labour mayoress of West Yorkshire, Tracy Braben. She tweeted this today, and this really pisses me off. Today, she says, we came together at West Yorkshire Combined Authority to learn about being a good ally to our friends and colleagues. Good ally. Beyond now, LGBTQIA+, History Month. Is there a History Month for LGBTQIA+? There is. She says, I will continue to do all that I can to listen to and to best support the LGBTQIA+ communities. Still asking. Rand McNally. Somebody phone Rand McNally. Rand, can you please update your Atlas is pleased to include the LGBTQ plus IA communities. Where are they? What's the population? What about the relief? What about the relief? Do you remember that term? Geography. The relief. It's all about mountains. Remember? What about the relief? Is it flat land in the LGBTQ I plus AA? Fuck me communities, is it? Tell us about these places. Is there a capital city? Is there a governor or a governess? Or are you not allowed to have binary terms like those? Is it all non-binary? Yeah. How do you be an ally? I say this again because I'm so proud of her to this day. Mrs. works for one of the biggest corporations on planet Earth. They asked her last year to sit in and listen to her LGBTQIA+++ staff members so that she could listen to their experiences of being gay. My missus said, fuck off. She didn't say it quite like that. My French accent is just the same as all my other accents. They all sound the same. She said, no, thank you, not interested. And when they asked why, she said, don't ever ask me why. I said, no, and that's the end of it. And that was the end of it. An ally. I tweeted Tracy Braben. Can you explain how one becomes an ally of someone solely based on their sexuality? How do I become an ally to a gay person? Exactly. What do you mean by ally? Fuckers. Anywho, Jessica Barden is an actress and she's pissed off. She's a working class actress. At least I think she is. A working class actress. And she's pissed off that posh actresses are taking gigs playing characters from less privileged backgrounds. And Jessica Barden has called this working class tourism. So Benedict Cumberbatch, I'd imagine he's some dickhead, him. Just based on his name. Benedict Cumberbatch, right, he shouldn't be playing, say, a lad from Ballybeg in Waterford or a lad from Ballymun in Dublin because he's too posh and he wouldn't have that experience. This is silly, but it's also very current, these ideas, right? So Jessica Barden said, Emma Corrin, who I think has been in The Crown on Netflix, and she's a bit of a posh totty, is young Emma, who refers to herself as they, but she's a girl. Don't play less privileged characters because it's working class tourism. It's not good enough. Shouldn't happen. We're back to Steve Coogan and Jimmy Savile. You know, he can play Jimmy Savile and he can manage to do that without having first been a horrendous pederast, right? Right. So she says, speaking to the Sunday Times, she says, does Jessica, gritty means working class and feisty means you have an opinion. I die inside when I read them. I was like, why are you allowed to talk like this? How is working class tourism still okay for posh actors? Shut your pie hole, lass. Shut your ruddy pie hole, I would say to her. Let's hear two actresses give their take on it. First up is Melissa Johns. Melissa, what do you think?
I think it's just worth saying acting, the best acting is based in truth. It is about authenticity. And that's when you just get that lived experience. And it means that that completely comes out in your character. But I think the other thing here is that acting, being a good actor is one part of being an actor. OK, being good at acting is just one thread in all of that. Being good at acting is not enough to survive and succeed in this industry. It's all the other things around it that maybe privilege supports.
So what you're saying is this isn't just about what you bring to the role. It's about giving opportunities to people who might otherwise be overlooked. So Emma Corrin, the actor, says, I want to play grittier roles with an outrageous accent. And your point is, give those roles to people who are gritty with outrageous accents rather than actors who have more privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Open up that opportunity. It's about equality of opportunity and taking into consideration people's lived experiences.
Well, they're not acting then, are they?
So I think one thing that we do quite often is we mistake passion and privilege. Mm. Oh, that actor is so, you know, if you're passionate enough, then you'll make it. That's not the case, actually. To succeed as an actor, you have all the other things around it.
Ah, shut up. What about Debbie Arnold? What does she think?
I've played a murderer and I haven't killed anybody.
That's the end of the argument.
You go, girl.
And I feel that's it. You know, acting, it's in the name, isn't it? We act things. So we don't have to personally go through those things. We don't have to have a gritty background, do we, in order to portray that? And, of course, you don't know where people come from originally. I mean, a lot of us actors have sort of minimal accents. I mean, where would you think I was from? Well, Pat, I'm from Sunderland. You see what I mean? So I'm masquerading as a posh person, but that's because I'm an actor.
Right, right. Is there not something, though, if you think of Jim Roll, Ricky Tomlinson, the authenticity with which he plays that role, isn't that because he's just being himself? Isn't there an advantage to being yourself when you're acting?
Well, yes and no, because if you are yourself, then you can only play yourself. I find it very
Michael Caine only played himself.
Yes, and there are a lot of actors who play themselves. And if you're playing yourself, that's fine. But a lot of actors don't play themselves. I mean, most of us don't play ourselves. I mean, at the moment, I'm playing a tart in the theatre in Sonning. And I'm not one. And I also haven't been married five times like she has.
She's not a tart, is Debbie Arnold. Jean Anne once played a hairdresser, famously. And presumably, by this logic, she withheld. She basically disadvantaged. She took a role that should have been reserved for a real hairdresser. Or an actress who had experience of hairdressing, if you buy that logic. 22 minutes, it is to the top of the hour. It is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. Sally Beck joining the programme a bit later on, in fact, not too long from now. Lots to get into with her. Check her out at The Conservative Woman. You'll find her on Twitter. You'll find The Con Woman or The Con Wom, W-O-N-W-O-M, as it is on Twitter, if you want to follow The Conservative Woman there. Really interesting articles on there. Lots to get into with Sally. Okay. No, don't. Okay, fair enough. I'll go on, I will. I'm going to play a quick tune and then I'm going to talk lots more with you about lots of things. That's how it goes. Carly Jepsen, Call Me Maybe on Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. The time is 18 minutes now to the top of the hour, the 28th of February. Waiting for the voice to disappear. It's going to happen today or tomorrow. It's weeks of this. talked about it briefly yesterday. I don't want to bore you with it, but I've had a number of emails from people suggesting, and this is pure speculation, nobody knows, but that to sum it up very quickly, that the jabs and being around people who have been jabbed might be somehow detrimental to those of us who didn't have a jab. Now, this is speculation, and I am not spending any time around anyone who is jabbed because I don't see very many people. My better half obviously didn't have a jab. I didn't have a jab. As far as I understand it, my neighbours on both sides didn't have a jab. And it being the winter and with everybody being busy, we don't spend a lot of time in each other's company anyway. And I don't see very many people from morning till from dawn till dusk. So I don't know. But I have asked a GP friend of mine, and you know, it's very difficult for him to speculate too, because he will know those patients of his who have had jabs and those who don't, but keeping tabs on them in terms of illnesses through this particular winter is not straightforward. You get what I'm saying there? I went kind of made a mess of that, but yeah, I wonder. Anyway, we'll leave that one there. Hi to William, who says, I'd have gone to the gay trans meeting. I bet it was hilarious, says William. Yeah, but I suppose that you have the choice of... The thing to do is not to go. I hear you, loud and clear. Because if you went and you were to say something that somebody maybe took offence to, you might find yourself in trouble, you see. I couldn't sit still. I wouldn't attend a meeting of gay colleagues. If I worked in a company, come and meet your gay colleagues. There might be three, maybe, out of 100. Come in and listen to them share their experiences so that you can be an ally. I would say no. Of course, if I did go, I wouldn't be able to keep my mouth shut even. And then you're in all sorts of... You're in serious deep water then when it comes to your job prospects, I would imagine. If you dared to say, well, this is just a load of bollocks, this really. What's wrong with you? Shut up whinging. Nobody cares about your sexuality except you. Okay. Davey asks me, is there any news on the new app? Yes, the app should be with us as late as next week. No doubt about that. Takes a couple of weeks to do it. Signed off on the look of it and how it should be presented on Friday. So sometime next week, I reckon, the app will be on the app stores, on whichever app stores you use, Google or Apple, it should be there. Okay, right. Let's quickly do something else because time is pressing. This is a very serious story. You may have come across this afternoon. You may not have come across it. This is out of Wakefield in Yorkshire. So a school in Wakefield, believe it or not, has suspended four young lads, for slightly, ever so slightly, damaging a copy of the Quran, ever so slightly, scuffing it, right? This is Kettlethorpe High School. Where does that name come from? Kettlethorpe High School. It has no religious, how do I say this, denomination? It has no religious affiliation. So it's not a Church of England school. It's not a religious school at all, right? Okay. And the school acted under pressure from local Muslims, including local Muslim councillors and mosque leaders, after the Quran was dropped on the floor, causing a minor scuff mark to a couple of pages and a tiny tear on the cover. This began when one pupil from a non-Muslim family, a child with autism, high-functioning autism, he lost a video game that he was playing with his mates, and he was given a dare to do as a forfeit, right? And the dare was to go and buy a Quran and bring it into school. The kid had bought a Bible earlier that week. Okay, so he bought a Bible as the result of another forfeit. Now he was asked to buy a Quran. The head teacher said there's absolutely no ill intent on the part of the pupils involved. However, the pupils received death threats when this emerged in Wakefield. So much so that one of the boys' mothers was basically coerced into appearing at a news conference alongside police officers in the local mosque, begging for forgiveness for the child's disrespectful behaviour and seeking forgiveness from the Muslim community. This is astounding stuff, this. It isn't bullshit. I've had a good look at this today. It's absolutely true that this happened. These young lads, absolutely no intention to cause anybody any embarrassment. There are no blasphemy laws in this country, none in the UK, and quite rightly, there are no blasphemy laws. We don't need them because agnostic people like me, we don't feel the need to go around insulting people's faith or their religions. The great, great majority of people wouldn't do that. We have respect for people's beliefs. But this kid was dared to buy a Bible. Then another week he's dared to buy the Quran. It gets a bit of a scuff mark on it. There are death threats. And one of the boy's mums then is forced into going to a conference in a mosque. A news conference. Apologising for the kid's behaviour and begging forgiveness from the Muslim community in Wakefield. Wow. Ben Jones is with the Free Speech Union. Here he is speaking to Talk Radio's Julia Hartley Brewer this morning. Listen carefully to this, dear listener.
The police have recorded it as a hate incident, and that's despite the fact that school have investigated this.
School investigated and said there's nothing wrong with it, no ill intent on the pupils, all very harmless, but the police have put it down as a hate incident.
And concluded that there was no malicious intent whatsoever. And so now we have the spectacle earlier of a British mother brought into a mosque. She's not a Muslim. She's made to wear a hijab or agrees to wear one under some duress, one would imagine. And she's reduced to effectively begging for the life of her autistic son, who has lightly scuffed this copy of the Quran. And all the while, a police officer is sat next to her while a community leader, in inverted commas, is praising the mother for not pressing charges against the other boys who've sent death threats against her child. So, I mean, if you described this thing 20 years ago to somebody and said this would be happening in England in 2023, you'd have been called a fantasist, an Islamophobic bigot, yeah. And God only knows
and
what.
It's not a fantasy because we saw what happened to the Batley Grammar School teacher, who, by the way, he and his wife and four children are still in hiding today, well over a year on, because of all he did was show pictures of the Prophet Muhammad in a discussion about these particular issues of these cartoons. Now, this is the thing. The outrage here seems to be directed at some lads at school who, you know, messed around with a book, okay, as opposed to counsellors decrying them, calling about desecration, talk about a serious, one counsellor talked about this being a serious provocation. Given that we know that, you know, that people get killed for less and yes. Threats of killing, the idea that people should try and stir this up, community leaders, counsellors, others, the police even, is really outrageous because we know that there is only, it would appear, with this one particular religion where for some reason we give a free pass, there seems to be perfectly acceptable for people to say, I'm offended by any treatment of my God, my religion, my holy text. And therefore that in some way would justify violence or violent threats.
Well, the worst thing is not just that people are terribly outraged and frankly need to grow up. It's that the British state has completely receded. It's completely thrown in the towel. And so you have the head teacher saying that if more consequences have to be followed, that will be the case, despite having concluded, as I've said, there was no malicious intent. And then you have the police collaborating with this sort of sham, shadowy, blasphemy prosecution of an autistic schoolboy. And the British state is absolutely nowhere to be seen, or it's carrying out this appeasement. But there's no logical endpoint for such a strategy to end. I mean, what happens if...
This is interesting. He says, pursuing this strategy, the British government just ignoring this, right? I mean, this is absolute... I mean, the far right love this shit, right? And they'll make... I mean, they'll run with this and run with it. Obviously, I don't have a right-wing bone in my body. This is absolutely dangerous. This is dangerous in the extreme, this. To have a mother coerced by the police and by local Muslim councillors to go to a mosque and wear a hijab, prostrate herself, beg forgiveness for her autistic son who bought a Quran as a dare, having the week before bought a Bible as a dare, having lost video games. In a country where there are no blasphemy laws, quite rightly, again he says, hurriedly, But what he says here is interesting. Where does this lead?
It is absolutely nowhere to be seen, or it's carrying out this appeasement. But there's no logical endpoint for such a strategy to end. I mean, what happens if community leaders decide they don't want girls going to school, they don't want women showing their hair in public, they don't like the idea of same-sex couples holding hands? There's no off-ramp here. There's no logical point at which we can embark on this appeasement with this religious Islamic intolerance and then say, right, well, that's a compromise and we're not going any further.
Yeah. Death threats, yeah. I mean, again, vaudeville. Again, at this news conference, in the mosque. On the one hand, you have the mum of the autistic boy begging for forgiveness, you know, fearing for his life because of the death threats. And then you have a Muslim Labour councillor saying, oh, by the way, thanks for not prosecuting the bastards who threatened your son's life. The police in this country. The police! In this country, I am still, I have to have a scan on my elbow, my right elbow, because of what happened to me a few weeks ago, thrown 10 feet into the air, knocked down by a car and a van that fled, and the police don't give a fuck about that. And they're writing up hate crimes, children, an autistic kid, forcing a kid and his mother to go to a local mosque to beg forgiveness. I tell you, dear listener, it's 7 minutes to the top of the hour. Times, there are times when you feel like screaming, right? Keep your comments coming in. It's richieallen.co.uk. It's live comment top of the page on the menu bar there. Jenny came on to say, you can see why the police do not have time to investigate the hit and run, Richie. This is before I spoke. How can someone nearly killing you compare in importance with someone slightly damaging a book? And I say again, and there will be people laughing at the fact that I'm talking about the hit and run again, even though I haven't spoken about it very much. The thing that astounded me was when I put this on Twitter, I was contacted by dozens of people, including by a man who runs a group where people come to report inactivity or a complete lack of interest on the part of the police in the crimes committed against these people. So victims of crime were coming out of the woodwork. And some of the, far more serious than things that happened to me. The police don't give a damn. And then they're all over this. Imagine it. Josh says it's the Islamization of Britain. I don't think it is, Josh. But listen, we can agree to disagree. And again, I'm sure listeners will be screaming at me now saying, oh, you're a shill. I don't think it's the Islamization of Britain. No, this is not an agenda that I don't believe it's an agenda dreamt up by Islamists or Muslims. No, this is coming from somewhere else, would be my argument. But listen, absolutely, it's your opinion. Nelly says, why did kids tell another kid to buy a Bible and Quran? Kids are weird. You think they would tell the kid to buy a book of toilet jokes, says Nelly. Good question. Maybe they want, maybe some logic, children, youngsters. I barely remember my teenage years. Maybe somebody in the group thought it might be a bit embarrassing to go to a local bookstore and buy a religious text, maybe. It's not the thing you would imagine that teenagers would do. Maybe that's the reason. Patricia asks, where are the apologies for churches being burnt down? Nick says, Thorpe is associated with coal mining, hence Kettlethorpe, the Kettlethorpe School in Wakefield. Thank you for that. Brian says, a friend of his, around 40, has had a massive stroke. He wasn't jabbed, but works in a large nursing home where all the residents and probably most of the staff are jabbed. I can't but wonder if shedding is a factor in what happened to him. Interesting, Brian. That's an interesting point of view. It might very well be. I don't know. Wonderful stuff. Keep the comments coming in. Great to hear from you this particular Tuesday. It is time for another tune, I think, while I get Sally on. Sally Beck will be with me in about 4 minutes' time. Really looking forward to catching up with Sally, because it's been a long time since Sally was on the programme. Since we last spoke, Sally has relocated. So she has. We might talk about that when she comes on. Here are She and Him on Tuesday's Richie Allen Show with me, Richie Allen, BBG Towers here in the heart of Salford. Yeah, I can never pronounce her name. Zooey Deschanel, I think it is. Actress and singer, that's She and Him. and Why Do You Let Me Stay Here? It's about a minute to the top of the hour this Tuesday. It's your Richie Allen Show, richieallen.co.uk. And, of course, the programme is going out on the TuneIn app. It's going out on TuneIn and Fab Radio 2 here in the great city of Madchester.
Ask not what the BBG can do for you, but what you can do for the BBG. Support the Richie Allen Show now at richieallen.co.uk.
Yeah, my guest today is a magnificent lady, really brilliant. It's a shame she's not been on for ages, but thank God she's back today. Decades of experience in writing for the national press and magazines. We, many of us first learned about Sally when she reported on the MMR controversy 20 years ago or thereabouts now. She writes these days for The Conservative Woman. You should really check her out there. If you Google that or DuckDuckGo, just look for Sally Beck, or go to conservativewoman.co.uk. Let's welcome her back to the show. It's a real pleasure. Sally, how are you?
I'm really well, Richie. How are you?
I'm 1,000%. Is it okay to ask you where you are and why you're there, or is that for another day?
No, you can ask me. The answer is I'm in Zanzibar.
Lovely.
And I'm a COVID refugee. Unfortunately, the president of Zanzibar seems to have been unlived, but he had a very negative reaction to the COVID pandemic. He thought it was all a scam. So quite a lot of us came here, I think, just to, you know, just to escape the madness.
To escape the madness here. Yeah. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And what's it been like, the experience of Zanzibar?
It's delightful. Honestly, it's such a country. The scenery, the people are really gentle, helpful, kind. I've just met some great people here. I'm really couldn't have wished to be anywhere nicer, if I'm totally honest.
Fantastic. You're just south of, but not really south, just like millimeters below the equator, right?
We're 400 miles, so that means that we have pretty much 12 hours of daylight a day, all for the whole year. So, yeah, that's where we are, 400 miles from the equator.
Now, tell me this, Sally. Is there a noticeable health benefit from being in a country where you get 12 hours of sunlight a day?
Do you know what? The first health benefit I noticed was that I stopped worrying, really. I could start living again. I was stopped worrying about, you know, whether I was wearing a mask. No one wears masks here. I stopped worrying about whether I had had a COVID vaccination. They're just not really on offer here, although you can get them, because 90% of the healthcare here is traditional and alternative medicine, which means it's kind of based in herbal medicine. And I could move forward. I just felt, I've been back to the UK twice in the last year, so I've been here pretty much a year, just over a year now. And every time I go back, the first thing everyone says is, don't you look well? And fine, I've got a suntan, so that's going to help. But also, I don't have the anxiety that I had back in the UK of always looking over my shoulder. Am I saying the wrong thing to the wrong person? Am I speaking out of turn? It's just nothing like that. It's just so nice.
Bliss. It sounds like bliss, Sally, to me. Brilliant articles in the Conservative Woman of late. And I want to talk about one you had published about 3 weeks ago, or just under 3 weeks ago, because it's really important. Because before this COVID thing, this scam, as I think it is, and I know there are people listening who don't agree, but I covered kind of extensively, particularly with Irish families, damage caused by the human papillomavirus vaccines, like Gardasil and stuff like that. And you've written this brilliant piece about how there's a lot of focus at the moment, quite understandably, because of the remarks of the MP Andrew Bridge, and because one or two mainstream presenters have been able to raise the question about vaccine damage. You have heart doctors coming out asking questions as well and suggesting that the jabs are, you know, are very harmful. And you've written this brilliant piece about, well, hang on a second, vaccine injury is, not only is it not new, but it's obviously not confined to COVID injections. And you get into the pandemics and the Gardasil and even MMR, Sally. Really good stuff. Really important.
Thank you, Richie. The whole HPV issue, the gaslighting that goes on, if anyone dares to say, I think I or I think my child has had a reaction to the vaccine that you gave them 2 days ago or 5 days ago or 10 days ago, it's just horrendous. There's no investigation. There's no tests that are done. There's no acceptance even that the vaccines can cause damage, even though it's in the public information leaflets that they can. And the fight, the battle, if a parent decides, actually, I need to pursue this, because by pursuing it, you will then find out how to fix your child, because then you know what's causing their problems. If they decide to pursue it, it's horrendous. The lady I interviewed, Claire Ramage, 3 weeks back, actually has post-traumatic stress disorder caused by doctors. So if a doctor, a new doctor that she knows, comes into the room that she doesn't know, she will start to shake, because she and her family, and particularly her daughter, Rebecca, have had such horrific experiences with doctors. And there's one thing you don't know, Richie, and I didn't know, and I need to investigate it. So I'm saying allegedly at the moment. But apparently on children's wards and wards where there are teenagers, the person who has the last say on any treatment that those children or teenagers have is a psychologist. And a psychologist is the one who basically decides, oh yeah, we think these kids are making this up. They've been here 6 weeks. They're not getting better. Their medication is doing nothing for them. Our medication is doing nothing for them. And then they will say, well, it's clearly all in their mind, because of course our medication is fabulous. And the psychiatrist will have the last say on their care.
I did not know that, Sally.
I didn't know that. And I'm going to investigate it. This is hearsay at the moment, I'm going to add. But I have no reason to disbelieve this parent who told me, whose daughter was told after a year of failing at getting better at a big London teaching hospital that clearly you haven't got better, so it's got to all be on your mind, in your mind, so we're sending you to somewhere that's going to treat your mind and not your body.
But yet we know that HPV vaccine injuries have been reported in great numbers in Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, in Scandinavia, and even in the Far East. So I don't know anything about medicine. I'm a lay man, a lay person. But I would find it difficult to believe that all of these young women in different parts of the world are sharing some sort of psychosis where they are imagining these things. It's got to be impossible that they're imagining it, Sally.
It is impossible that they're imagining it. And, yeah, you know, the major symptoms for HPV injury sufferers are chronic fatigue syndrome or ME. And for years, CFS and ME sufferers were told that it was all in their mind. But I was just reading today a piece I wrote back in 2021, and you've had Dr. Sarah Myhill on your program. Sarah Myhill recognized really early on that actually this is not a problem of the mind, it's a problem of the mitochondria. And she set about proving it, and she actually managed to get NICE to update their guidelines, because ME and CFS sufferers were prescribed something called graduated exercise therapy.
And they were told that if you just do a little bit more exercise a day, you will get better. If they didn't get better, they were prescribed cognitive behavioural therapy to try and change their attitude towards the graduated exercise therapy, because clearly it was their attitude that wasn't working and not their therapy. But Sarah Myhill managed to prove, with the help of very many professors, that this was absolutely not the case, and NICE changed their guidelines on the back of that, which is amazing. So it just goes to show, if you've got a dedicated doctor in your corner who will fight your corner and, you know, manages to go the distance, because we know what happens to every single doctor who's tried to take on the establishment, that they, you know, they just get hung out to dry. But if you keep going, you can uncover what's going on in the end.
This is really important today, not least because of the damage that is alleged to have been caused to so many by their exposure to COVID jabs. That's important. We can talk about that in a minute. But also because at the moment, the World Health Organization is talking about creating a vaccine for bird flu, because of some story about a young girl contracting bird flu and her father. And this is at an advanced stage, this, well, at least the talks. So presumably, at some stage in the next few months, a bird flu jab will emerge, Sally. I'm guessing it will. What are you hearing on this? What are you reading?
Well, what I'm hearing is even worse than that, Richie, and that is two things. That by 2030, the WHO want us to have 500 vaccines, have had 500 vaccines. And at the moment, they're talking about converting childhood vaccinations to mRNA vaccinations. But this is all about patents, you know, because Big Pharma feeds off patents. They feed off the money that they make on their patented drugs. And the only really super effective thing they had in their arsenal were antibiotics. And we know they're becoming really ineffective, so they need something else. So they absolutely have to establish vaccines as a prevention for all diseases.
For everything.
Because none of their cures work, pretty much. That's a blanket exaggeration. But what they do is create patients for life by coming up with drugs that control your symptoms rather than cure you. So that's where we are with Big Pharma. And the other thing we know about Big Pharma...
Sally, before you go there, did you say that you, as far as you understand it, by the end of the decade, they plan to have on offer around 500 different jabs for different things?
Yeah. That's what the WHO want us to have received, 500 different vaccines.
Now, here's the $64 million question before you finish off what you were about to say about Big Pharma. On some level, do these people believe they're doing the right thing by people's health, or is that for the birds now, no pun intended, is this about something completely different?
I think by now they know that vaccination is emperor's new clothes. And I know that because back in the MMR days, I went to the Royal Society of Medicine Library to check to see how many deaths we'd been saved from because of the MMR vaccination. I was expecting thousands. Well, the truth about it, and anybody can go to the Royal Society of Medicine Library and check the figures. If you go back to the end of the 1800s, which is when they started recording the figures, we had about, I suppose, maximum, and I'm doing this from memory, so these won't be accurate figures, but maximum about 1,500 deaths a year from measles. The measles vaccination was bought in 1968, and the MMR was bought in 1988. And by 1968, pretty much 98% of deaths from measles had ceased. And that was purely because of better food, better healthcare, better housing, and better water.
You're saying that the jabs had nothing to do with it, in your opinion?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Well, it's not my opinion. It's the figures. They show. But when you go online, they will show you the figures just going back to 1940. So it looks like you have a nice steady drop from 1940 and to date, where we have no deaths from measles. And it looks like the MMR has played a part in that. But if you look at the figures as a whole, you can see quite clearly that the MMR played absolutely no part in that at all.
And have scientists endorsed this hypothesis? Have some scientists said, yes, Sally is right, and people like journalists, because Sally, I read you before I ever met you. I know you as a journalist with, you know, an impeccable ethical record. You don't print what you can't prove. So you say the jabs, the measles jab, didn't bring about the end of the measles. Presumably there are scientists and doctors who are saying the same thing, or have said.
Well, let me, so the World Health Organization and the NHS Health Security both had on their website during COVID that the one thing that's going to protect you more than a vaccination is clean water. Well, no one in the West doesn't have access to clean water. So what the hell do we need a vaccine for that opens up risks to adverse reactions?
Not to mention when we were children, we were thrown on top of other children with measles and we got it and then we got over it.
Exactly. And, you know, some children didn't and some children did die. People did die. But these weren't well-nourished children living in good housing without a comorbidity. These weren't healthy children who were dying from measles. And I understand the anxiety to keep all children healthy. But the best way to keep all of us healthy is to have good diet, clean water, decent housing. And if you think about our grandparents, look at the age that they lived to. We were just talking about this tonight, sitting on the beach, Richie, after my yoga class, having a glass of wine. We were talking about post-war and post-war diets and the fact that the food wasn't drenched in fertilizer or pesticides. We weren't shoveling in processed food from morning till night. We didn't have to, they didn't have tons of sugar, our grandparents. They weren't brought up on antibiotics or vaccination, and they were living till 80, 90. You know, my mum lived until she was 80. My grandma lived till she was 80. My great grandma lived till she was 80. I doubt if we'll live till we're 80, Richie.
Yeah. Wow, Sally Beck is our guest. Sally is writing these days from Zanzibar for The Conservative Woman, a terrific online publication. Check it out at conservativewoman.co.uk. 500 by the time we get to 2030, Sally. I mean, that's astonishing. And I mean, there will, with that amount, like with the figure as high as that, you would imagine there will need to be some coercion involved as we approach the end of the decade. Is that something you're concerned about, that? I mean, we saw this. I mean, you said yourself, it was so crazy in the UK. You know, a rational, intelligent, reasonable, you know, qualified woman like yourself got the hell out of Dodge. Do you see it coming in the next few years where they start presenting these jabs as preventative measures against, I don't know, diabetes, obesity, God knows what? Will there be a coercive element to that, do you think, Sally?
There's got to be. I mean, they're even working on a vaccine to protect you from fentanyl. Now, yeah, I don't know that. What you know about fentanyl, but it can be used as a recreational drug. I think it was one of the drugs that killed Michael Jackson, and it's also used in anesthetic. It's a really super strong painkiller. And they're developing a vaccine against fentanyl. It's unbelievable the things they're developing vaccines against, because they realise that people, they've now scared people into thinking that if you get ill, this is a terrible, terrible problem. Whereas if you go to India, just go back to measles a bit, when the kids get measles, they call it a visitation from the goddess, because they know that it gives you a system reboot, if you like. It gives you a system upgrade. Your immune system learns something it didn't know before, and it helps to protect you against other diseases. When my daughter was 13 months when she got measles, and I was quite scared, because the last thing I'd read was Roald Dahl in the doctor's surgery explaining that his daughter had died from measles. But I spoke to a homeopath, and the homeopath said, look, two things are going to happen. She's going to feel hot today. She's going to start getting cooler tomorrow. The day after, she'll be getting back to normal. And then she's likely to start doing something new. And I thought, oh, my God, you are nuts. This is crazy. But anyway, I'm in India. I can't do anything about it. So exactly that happened. And then the whole thing about doing something new, suddenly she, out of the blue, just started saying all these words. She was only 13 months old. And just all of a sudden, all these new words came out. And I thought, well, that was really interesting. And I remember talking to Jane Donegan, Dr. Jane Donegan, who you've also had on your program. And her daughter was 8 years old, wasn't reading at all. And she developed a fever. And Jane said that doctors are notorious for letting their children die because they don't tend to worry too much about illness. And she said her daughter really had a very, very high fever. And she was getting quite scared. She thought, just hold the line, hold the line. It's all going to be fine. It's all going to be fine. You know how to nurse her. You know what to give her. And then suddenly the fever started to go down. And her daughter picked up this video tape and completely read what was on the side of the tape, having not been able to read before she got the fever. So the theory is that these fevers have a big clearing out process for children. So by dousing them with Calpol and suppressing the fever, you're stopping them from burning up, having a little sort of internal bonfire, burning up lots of stuff that shouldn't be there, and helping them move on to the next stage.
That's fascinating. But you could... it's beyond. I mean, I love this stuff. But it would be okay to put an ice blanket on the child, would it? That's not the same as using Calpol to suppress the fever. Or do you need to just allow that fever to roar and see itself out?
You know, you're not going to let them get to the stage where they're going to start having a convulsion. So, you know, 138, 139, just cool compresses on the head and on the back of the neck, actually. You know, if you feel people on the back of the neck, that's where you feel their temperature. And obviously, if you got really scared, you would take them straight to A&E if you got really scared. But we've forgotten the value of nursing children as well, because it's a real bonding time nursing your child through an illness. But when mums are in full-time work, they can't afford to take that time off to nurse their child through measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, and flu, or whatever else they're going to get. You know, it's a sort of time-saving thing in many respects.
Straight to big pharma medicines cough medicines and syrups and everything else that you mentioned. Sally Beck is our guest, folks, live from Zanzibar. Sally's a journalist with decades of experience. I'm reticent to say decades, Sally, when I'm speaking to a lady. Decades of experience.
It is true.
it is true. Yeah, you're hardly an old lady, but you've put the hours in over the years. And Sally's been reporting on vaccines since the late 1990s. She's written for everybody, and these days you'll find her most often in conservativewoman.co.uk. Hey, before we move on, Sally, you mentioned Roald Dahl. What about the trend of editing the books of people like Roald Dahl or Enid Blyton or even Ian Fleming, as a writer yourself and somebody who's got a great command of the written word? What, how do you feel when you read those stories?
Oh, it's so hard, isn't it? I mean, it's like editing the Bible. It's really, really hard. You know, Roald Dahl wrote for the generations that he wrote for. And I understand that to some people, a fat, ugly witch may be offensive. It's just so hard. I think maybe it's just better if you don't read the books.
Yeah, rather than censor them or edit them.
Rather than censor them.
There was a funny...
I also understand that the Roald Dahl estate doesn't want to lose that income.
But it's funny, funny you mention that, because this has been on Breakfast TV pretty much all week here. And there was a black lady, very, very eloquent lady, it must be said, but who didn't have a sense of irony. She was calling for the censorship of Ian Fleming's books. And then she was saying, she first of all started off saying that the, you know, the people who hold the license for or the royalties for the Ian Fleming books, you know, they would rail against that. But then she went on to say something funny. She was calling for the censorship of the books and taking out the N-word and, you know, all of this misogyny and Bond and the women falling at his feet and all of that. But then she showed it to her teenage daughters. And ironically, the daughters laughed at it and said it was just all very silly and sure, nobody carries on like that today. So job done. You don't need to censor it. Children are not stupid.
You're right.
You know. Yeah, this is right.
It's us who are sensitive to it.
Yeah.
Rather than teenagers and young adults. And I've had this conversation, you know, with teens and young adults on many occasion, and they just don't see things the way we do. Actually, I think there was a really good scene in that great drama, comedy drama with Gillian Anderson, Sex Education. And if the listeners don't know it, she was a sex therapist, and her son as a teenager started offering therapy to teens at school. Anyway, the mum, Gillian Anderson, wheedled her way into school, and she was talking to one of the kids, one of the teenagers, who had this, who said, oh, you know, every time my boyfriend, every time I come, I have to put a pillow over my boyfriend's face. Right. And Gillian Anderson, as the sex therapist, was going, well, you have to really search through your consciousness to find out, you know, what it is exactly. Why do you feel that you want to kill your boyfriend at this point?
Yeah.
And a few episodes down the line, it came out, well, no, I don't want to kill him. I've just got an ugly cum face. I just don't want him to see my cum face.
Yeah,
and the, you know, this is how we misunderstand and misread things as adults. Now, to us, a fat ugly witch is offensive.
Yeah.
To a child, they can totally see that is a fantasy character.
Yeah.
And not the teacher in the class.
But Sally, you say it's offensive.
Their mum.
You say it's offensive to us, and I think you're right. But the great, great majority of us do not go about referring to people like that, even when they're not present. We just don't. I mean, I've had a few choice words over the years for male and female bosses when they weren't around, but not to be referring to them in such crass terms. Most of us just don't speak like that. Or am
we
I
don't.
Wrong? Yeah.
No, we just don't.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, we even in the height of anger, maybe then we might throw around a few choice words, but generally we don't talk about people like
no,
that.
No, a few adjectives and superlatives. Before I ask you about your brilliant, and it is, I'm not just saying this, Sally, there's no sycophancy here. Sally has interviewed Aman Jabi. We'll talk about this in a moment, and this is talking about vital information. We'll come back to that in a second. But just on the likes of Mark Stein at GB News and Neil Oliver and one or two others and doctors in American Stanford, Jay Bhattacharya, he's been speaking out about the jabs. You have cardiologists here in the UK. Is that something to be hopeful about? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But What's interesting is that obviously I've been through this before where doctors have tried to raise the alarm and two things happen. You know, they will have an uphill struggle. The GMC will try and strike off a seam at some point. Jay seems to be walking the line quite well at the moment and he's protected by Stanford, hopefully.
Yeah.
But they either kind of have a bit of a breakdown or they weather the storm. So we really need to support these doctors who are speaking out so that they don't have breakdowns. They might have to come to the conclusion that they're going to convert to functional medicine doctors, and a functional medicine doctor is somebody who prefers alternative treatments to pharmaceuticals. But thank God they're speaking out, Richie. And I mean, you know, it must have been so hard for a scene to watch both his parents die prematurely. And he has gone the right way about it by absolutely wringing out the literature that's out there. Same thing with Peter McCullough and Ryan Cole in the US. Peter McCullough, the heart specialist, Ryan Cole, the pathologist. They've gone down the route of looking really into the literature so that they really can't be challenged on it. They've got all the evidence there. But even so, one thing I remember really early on was reading about the CIA brainwashing, when they started brainwashing people. And what they discovered was once they brainwashed people, even when they told them the truth, they didn't want to hear the truth. They just went with the lies because they'd been so well brainwashed. And that will happen to the majority of the population, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
we saw, yeah. You know, the whole mask wearing exercise was an exercise in compliance and virtue signaling. Who's going to show us that they really are able to follow instructions, and who's going to show their neighbours, you know, that they're the ones doing the right thing? And to ask people to go against that is pretty huge, I think.
I think you're right.
I don't know how it's going to pan out. Thank God doctors are speaking out.
And thank God they are. I'm on something called Next Door, which is a global app. And if you're on Next Door, you're connected with people who live in your neighbourhood or community. And it's often used for selling things or for asking for advice or something. But during lockdown number one, I was unsurprised but also horrified to see people giving out about and naming people who weren't complying. And one of the worst things I saw was there was a particular woman who doesn't live too far away from me. I don't have much to do with her. But she was going on to the Next Door app to name and shame house numbers of people who didn't appear on the doorstep on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock to clap the nurses. Yeah, so that level of brainwashing and that which you described there, I was very much aware of that back in 2020. Amazing, really.
Yeah. And also the government encouraged that, didn't they? They encouraged you to snitch on your neighbour. And we know that, you know, that's happened in history before. I think I don't need to name when.
Yeah, yeah.
But snitching on your neighbour and, oh, it's just all so grim. It was gruesome.
And these are the things that ultimately led you to abscond, Sally Beck, abscond to Zanzibar. Sally is, today it was uploaded today to conservativewoman.co.uk. Please read this. Is that streetlight watching you and eavesdropping too? By our own Sally Beck. And Sally has interviewed this really, really interesting gentleman called Aman Jabi. And some of you have been reading the article because you've been telling me about it online. Silicon Valley veteran, worked on video technology for a couple of decades. Sally, tell us who Aman Jabi is. What led you to him? And what is it that he is telling us that we need to hear?
Well, I saw an interview he did with an Australian media outlet called Z Media. And my ears pricked up when I heard about these smart polls. I mean, there was so much more in the interview, but I focused in on the smart polls and I thought, oh God, that just sounds too ridiculous. It's too sci-fi. And then I started Googling and immediately came up with .gov intelligent street lighting. And a man said, oh, these smart poles contain CCTV, they contain listening devices, they've got drone charging stations on the top, they've got electric vehicle charging stations on the bottom, they've got public address systems as well. They communicate by Wi-Fi and fiber optic cables under the road. And I thought, this just sounds just ridiculous. And there it was. And he also said that while we were all locked down, they were putting up these smart poles. And I thought, yeah, okay, let's have a look. So there it was on the .gov website. And they trialled their same system on the M40 back in 2021, when we were all locked down. And then they changed over the sodium lighting for these LED lights that are supposed to be greener. But somebody today posted a comment that said that whereas the sodium lights gave you a nice sort of even path, the LED lights give you patches of bright light. So, you know, why would you put those in if they don't give decent lighting? Yeah. Why would you? And the other thing I heard is the only reason we need 5G, we don't need 5G for faster downloading for ourselves, but artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things can only run if we have 5G. So now you can see how all the dots are coming together. Now we see the smart cities. It's all out in the open. They're telling us that we're going to have smart cities, even though Oxford are denying that they're locking people down. It was on Newsnight the other night, and I was in the UK, and I was screaming at the TV going, you've just said that they're going to be cameras that can log your car number yeah. plate and are going to be checking on you. But you're saying that we're not locked down. How is this not locked down? It was just incredible. And I was sitting with a friend who I would describe as normie, and she didn't hear that bit at all. She didn't hear any of that. She just heard that, oh, you know, these smart cities are not going to be enforcing climate lockdowns. That's what she heard.
And then in the next sentence, they explained how they would be effectively in a position exactly to do that. Yeah. Exactly. Sally, the smart polls, it occurred to me, listening to you speak about that, thinking back to the Wesley Snipes, Sylvester Stallone film, which a lecturer of mine in at Salford University, when I did my postgraduate degree in television and radio, a lecturer of mine was brilliant on this and talked about Demolition Man, even back then, back in 2004, as being, you know, one of the most important sci-fi films of all time. Sandra Bullock was in it because of the society it portrayed. And an amusing part of that film was Sylvester Stallone swearing and being fined on the spot by lampposts and stuff, right? That were listening to him. Remember that?
Really? I've never seen that film.
Yeah, he was.
Is that what really happened?
Yeah, well, he was in modern times, like in 1990 or 1990, whatever it was. So he was a cop and he was framed and he was frozen cryogenically. And then years and years later into the dystopian future, he's unfrozen because the super smart society isn't able to deal with the criminal that is Wesley Snipes. So they unfreeze Stallone and bring him 100 years or whatever it is into the future. And of course, it's crazy. It's really dystopian. And he's a streetwise cop, is Sly, right? His character. He's very good in it now. And a few times he's out and about and he can't get his head around why you know, there are no guns and why he can't do this and why he can't do that. So it's F this and F that. And no matter where he is, he hears a voice saying, whatever his name is, Stallone, you've been fined 5 credits for swearing. It's in violation of law, blah, 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 blah. And out of a lamppost or out of the wall comes a piece of paper that tells him you've been fined. Everything is listening. Everywhere you are, you will be tracked and traced in the film now to the point where you have zero privacy. Even in bed, nothing you do or say isn't monitored by the state. That's the premise of Demolition Man, when he arrives in the future, when he's unfrozen. And I had lecturers at uni at Salford, and they were saying, I swear on this, Ali, they were saying, people like Carol O'Reilly, an amazing woman, Irish woman who lectures at Salford, and people like C.P. Lee, the great Professor C.P. Lee, they were saying, this is coming, this. And we used to laugh at them, you know. Here we are, smart cities.
Oh, my God, I'm going to watch that film.
Oh, watch it. It's basically where we're going, Demolition Man, yeah.
Yeah, oh, well, do you know what? It gets worse. And I didn't put this in the article because I'm still researching it. But apparently these lampposts can be weaponized with something called an LED incapacitator. Now, for anyone who's listening, I've got sort of requests in with Homeland Security in Canada, in Sunderland, where there is allegedly an LED incapacitator on a lamppost there. But these LED incapacitators are non-lethal weapons. They're designed to cause you to suffer nausea, vomiting. They're called a puke ray. That's the nickname. Wired first wrote about them in 2007 and called them a puke ray. And they are a red, blue, green light on top of a lamppost, which a man seems to think can be weaponized and could cause you some serious damage. But, you know, he will talk to you about that when you get him on the show. I haven't been able to find the evidence for it yet, but I'm certainly looking into it. And there's certainly pictures. I know 100% the LED incapacitator exists. It was commissioned by Homeland Security in the US. It's been written about. It's supposed to be available in the form of a torch, but Mark Steele, who you might know, seemed to find one in Sunderland, in a seaside town in Sunderland, attached to a lamppost. But the film was so wobbly, I couldn't really see what was going on. And there was also a notice from the police, and the film was so wobbly, I couldn't read the notice from the police either. So I don't know what it said, but it did appear that these LED capacitators are being attached to LED lampposts.
Let me jump in right there. Kelly Ann Mills reporting for The Mirror in March of 2019. The headline is, with a video, Russian military's vomit-inducing ray captured on video for the first time. The first ever footage of Filin 5P-42 shows the light flashing on and off continuously as it's tested in St. Petersburg. Just in case anybody thought Sally was mad, and of course you're not mad, Sally, but people are listening to this for the first time. They never heard of me. They might have heard of you, they might not, and they're only finding these shows as we go along. Oh, that woman is crazy over in Zanzibar. She's far from crazy. This technology exists and it has done for years. Yeah. It's there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was invented in 2007.
Bang on.
$800,000 the two guys were given to develop it. But I'm going to definitely look up that piece in The Mirror. Definitely.
What sort of sick society, Sally, even imagines coming up with weapons like that to induce vomiting and nausea in the people that, I mean, I rant on about this on this show all the time. You know, people don't know any better. They vote these people in because they believe their shitty, excuse my French, lying manifestos. They believe that their elected officials are going to go out there and work for them to make their lives better, get them better jobs, better homes, better education. And what they get is crap like this. Lockdowns, tyranny, vomit-inducing LED lights. This is the crap they get people, you know, from their elected officials. Although that being said, it's plausible that most of the 650 MPs at Westminster probably don't know about any of this, possibly.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's interesting is how Andrew Bridgen has stepped up to the plate.
But yeah.
Before we start talking about those guys in Westminster, the other thing that Aman Jabi talks about is the way that they are gathering child data through children's toys. So they've got children's toys that are connected up to Wi-Fi that react in real time. I haven't researched that at all yet, but that's a whole nother topic. But apparently child data is really, really, it's all about gathering our data. We know that. And gathering the data is about controlling us. The more you try and control people, I saw a great video today. You know, in the UK, they've blocked off all these streets.
Yes.
So what people are doing now is changing their number plates with duct tape. And students who are sick of face recognition are painting black triangles on their face.
Fantastic.
So that they can't be recognized. So I have faith that the human race will rebel in the way that we've always rebelled. But what people have to realize, and what Aman said at the right at the end of my piece, was if we don't resist this, we are essentially indenturing our children and our grandchildren for hundreds of years to come.
Spot on. Yeah, I've got it here. He said to you, if you understand the severity of what is happening and don't resist, you are directly responsible for the permanent enslavement of your children and grandchildren. And that's fair. He's right. If you know what's going on and you don't do something to try and prevent it. And I like what you're saying. I do like to think that this might be the tipping point, this climate change nonsense, this smart cities, 15-minute cities, social credit system coming in to punish people, your carbon credit allowance. This might push enough people over the edge. You know, please God, if there is a God, Sally.
Yeah, well, you probably heard of Edward Dowd.
Yeah.
Who worked on Wall Street. So I interviewed him a while back, and it was his opinion that COVID was a cover for the fact that trillions have been misappropriated and gone missing. So I've been looking at the finance, the world of banking and finance recently. I haven't written anything about it yet, but I'm about 3 months into the research. But there's honestly so much that's gone on. But your informed listeners will know about when the US went bankrupt in 1933. And as a consequence of that, before they went bankrupt, the banks are outside our systems. They're not governed by any government. All the banks are independent. So if the banks want to, if we want the banks to bail us out, it's going to cost us. And when the US went bankrupt in 1933, apparently the banks demanded that every citizen from the age of 18, they profited from that citizen's labor. I don't really understand how it works yet, but it's something to do with our birth certificate. So yeah. The birth certificate became a form of indenturing us. So instead of being creditors, so if you think about it logically, you're creating this radio program. You know, I'm creating writing, people are growing food, people are painting pictures, making music. We're all expected to buy that back. So we're debtors in the system. When you take out a loan, the bank doesn't actually physically give you the cash. They just put numbers in
That's
your
right.
account.
Backed up by nothing.
But we physically pay them back cash.
With interest.
With interest. And this, everything we thought we knew, Richie, is not as it seems. Everything. And we have kind of COVID to thank for that, really, for waking us up.
No doubt about it. You know, the first thing that alerted me to the notion that the world was vastly different to how I understood it, it certainly was the September the 11th attacks and learning so much about those in the years after. But then it was learning about the creation of money. And Ford said, didn't he, that if people understood how money was created, there'd be a revolution. In the morning, Ford said, Sally Beck is our guest. There's so much interest in this, Sally. If you look at the live comment on my website, dozens and dozens of comments. Isn't it amazing that you mentioned Edward Dowd and trillions going missing? I just mentioned September the 11th. It's just occurred to me. On September 10th, Donald Rumsfeld, who was then the US Defence Secretary, I think he was at the time, he announced the day before September the 11th that the Pentagon couldn't account for $2.3 trillion that it had gone missing. Yeah. On the Monday, and I was working for WLRFM in Ireland at the time, and I do remember covering that story. And I do remember some years later speaking to an amazing journalist called Jim Mars, who's dead now, one of the greatest writers I ever encountered. And Jim said, Richie, governments, and Sally, you're an experienced journalist. You've done everything in writing. You've done it all, right? So you know, no government admits on a Monday that they've lost $2.3 trillion. You might, if you had to admit that, you would admit it on Friday afternoon, wouldn't you? And hopefully it gets lost over the weekend. And Jim Marr said to me, you would never admit on a Monday morning that you've lost $2.3 trillion unless you knew something was going to happen that week that would blow that story out of circulation. And I'll never forget that. The following day we had the so-called attacks on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon. Amazing, really.
Well, we had a former ITV director here for a while, and I never really looked into the 9/11 controversy, and clearly I should have done, but I didn't. I think I was busy having kids at the time.
Yeah.
And she said that she was working with an editor then, and he kept playing the plane going into the Twin Towers over and over again. He kept playing that footage, and he said, something is not right, something's not right. He couldn't put his finger on it, but he was absolutely convinced that something was not right with that footage.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah. And I mean, there are 2,000 architects and engineers, you know, qualified men and women, seriously qualified men and women, called architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, led by a guy called Richard Gage, who's a gentleman. And they say the buildings came down because of controlled demolition. It's over 2,000 men and women. They say it couldn't have been jet fuel. Jet fuel would obviously cause damage, but it wouldn't weaken the steel sufficiently for the collapses. There had to be something else going on. And this is kind of what set me on my journey. But I'm just looking, we've got about 3 minutes, Sally. You see, I said this to Caroline, my missus, earlier on. I said, I'm going to have this lovely chat with Sally, and it's just going to be over like that, and we're going to cover a lot. But I know you won't leave it as long before you come back, Sally. Please don't. It's been ages.
You kind of disappeared. What happened to you?
Well, no, towards the end of last year, I kind of blew up my studio. I didn't have a meltdown, but I was getting fed up of the job, having done it since 2014. And you know yourself what it's like, you know, producing, editing and creating talk radio 4 or 5 days a week, which I do. It's an incredibly difficult thing to do on your own. And I kind of hit the wall last summer, and I decided I'd change everything and spend a lot of money on kitting out the studio like a BBC studio, which is what I did. But it all went horribly wrong, and it took far longer than I expected. So I was out for about 3 months, and that didn't do the mental health any good either, to be honest. So, but I got it back online. I've got this Star Wars type studio now, Sally. It's absolutely incredible. In fact, there's
Have you got someone who can help you? Because that does really make a difference if you've got someone in your corner.
No, and you'll know why. You just can't. I mean, in this game, I mean, you're a professional journalist. I'm a professional journalist. Getting a producer to do it on a voluntary basis, because programmes like ours barely make enough money to cover the costs and give me a small wage, and that's a fact. It's my tax returns are a matter of public record. So there isn't any money there to hire a producer who would make my life so much easier. And we've tried voluntary people before, but you know yourself, Sally, well-meaning, but just not up to it. And that's the issue.
Yeah. It's a real sort of calling, isn't it? And, you know, we're like moths to the flame, where people, you know, sensible people will just sort of bow out. We just keep going, don't we?
Yeah. Well, no, this is it. Absolutely. And with that, well, listen, you're being very kind to me now. It's you and people like you who come on. I mean, it's a joy to talk to you today because of everything you've done in print media. Most print media journalists I invite on, they won't come on because they've been scared away by groups like Hope Not Hate and others. Because I've interviewed some characters in the past with opinions on everything. And that's there is a lot of self-censorship going on. And that drove me mad last year as well, to be honest. You know, I'm lucky enough, the show has a really big reach. And I'm not bragging when I say that. So when I go and ask a Guardian journalist or a Telegraph journalist or somebody to come on and have a chat, and they say, I'd love to, Richie, but I'm scared that I'll be hammered for coming on with you. That's soul destroying, that. It really is. And I don't think there's any time for that anymore. And I say that to these journalists, you know, there's no time left for that. Like, you know, you need to be reaching bigger and bigger audiences. And anyway, it's not about me. It doesn't matter.
I think, to be fair, Richie, if I hadn't have had people like you to talk to and the Conservative woman, my mental health would seriously have suffered badly. I mean, the last piece I wrote for mainstream media was January 2022, so pretty much a year ago. Yeah. So up until that point, for 32 years, I'd been writing for mainstream media. But I'd got to the stage where I thought, I can't keep pitching these stories, even simple stories like how your immune system works, so that people would know that you do have a defense mechanism, which is part of your body, which is there to protect you from COVID or whatever else it is. And if you've got enough vitamin C, even if you've got enough vitamin D, it will work and protect you really well. But even those stories, I just couldn't even get a response to them. I couldn't even get a no thanks, not for us, which is the usual thing that you get if mainstream media don't want your story.
It was basically a blanking, really. I've heard this from Jackie Devine. I've heard this from other journalists as well. Sally, we've got 90 seconds today. I want to thank you, for first of all, for coming back and giving us your time. I really do mean that when I say it. It means the world to me. Read Sally's latest articles, conservativewoman.co.uk. Her interview, we've just been talking about it with Aman Jabi, is essential. Read it and share it everywhere. Get people you know to read it, because this is factual. This stuff is coming. It's not scary. Not if enough people read it and understand it. Because if they do, we can do something about it. Final word to you, Sally. 30 seconds. It's been an absolute pleasure having you back.
Oh, thanks, Richie. I've really enjoyed it. I am Beck _ Sal, S-A-L-L, on Twitter. And I will share as much information there as I can.
Brilliant having you back on. And the Zanzibar experience, I think we could talk. We could do a show on that on its own, Sally. So listen, Godspeed to you. Continued success with the articles. And I hope it'll be real soon when we get you back on again. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too, Richie. Thanks very much.
Bye for now. The great Sally Beck. She is on Twitter, as she said. You'll find her there. I'm going to tweet Sally in a few minutes with the podcast of this live radio show. So do follow her there. She tweets regularly. Conservativewoman.co.uk. The Conservative Woman is an essential voice now, and Sally's a big part of it. Check it out if you haven't done before. That's pretty much it for the programme today. 1,000 thanks to you for listening to it. We're back tomorrow, Wednesday, the usual time at 5 o'clock, where undoubtedly I will have more interesting guests and chat for you. In the meantime, look after yourselves and one another. Closing out today's programme with the Bee Gees.